Welcome, everybody, to... it's not week three, but it's not really week four either. This is the international break version of the Mongols Premier League show. I'm Mike. With me, as always, is Kev and Josh. And also, we have Gene, our resident Arsenal supporter, and we have Justin, our resident Chelsea supporter. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Hello.
Thanks for having us on.
Yeah, it's great to be with you.
So we thought what we would do is, since, you know, there weren't any games that were going on, there was a lot of stuff that was going on, you know, transfer wise, and really we've talked about a number of these teams, you know, just the Kevin, Josh, and I, and talked about our feelings about how the teams are doing, but we're also not, you know, diehard Chelsea supporters or diehard Arsenal supporters. So we thought it was important to get some additional perspective in this episode. So what we're going to do is just talk a little bit about the season in general, sort of how things have been going, and then we're going to throw it out and we're just going to let everybody talk about their team and the highs and the lows and all of that, and sort of give everybody an idea of, you know, where us Pittsburghers stand on our team. I guess the first thing to talk about really is just the standings in general. So there's only been three games, so not a lot of stock you can put in this, but over those first three games, you know, your Champions League team, so your top four, are Man City, Chelsea, Man U, and Everton. City, Chelsea, Man U haven't lost yet. Everton are sitting on 7 points, and I can't see... Well, I can see Josh right now. He's pretty much grinning ear to ear.
It's after three games. Wipe that smile.
Let me have this, Kevin. Let me have this. It's the only time this is going to happen, all right? So let me have it.
I think the other interesting thing is that Hull... is, after three games, they're sitting on 6 points. I think at some point we're going to be talking about them in a little bit more detail, because they basically took Man U to the wire last week, which I thought was really interesting. In terms of local fans, Spurs are currently in seventh. They're on 5 points. Arsenal's in eighth with four. Liverpool's on 11th with 4 points. And
it's
then...
going to be one of those shows, huh?
And bringing up the bottom, we have Watford, Bournemouth, and Stoke all on 1 point each. They're sitting in the relegation zone. So obviously there's, you know, 20 whole teams. We didn't talk about all of them, but these are the ones that, you know, we know that there are definitely supporters in Pittsburgh interested in those teams. So that's sort of where things stand here. We're going to get into sort of the interesting stuff here towards the end, just league-wide. But before we do that, let's talk about the teams. So we're going to go in alphabetical order here. Arsenal's at the top. Gene, thanks again for joining us, man. Let's lead it off with you. You know, what are your thoughts thus far? You know, Arsenal was a little bit active in the transfer market. We were talking a little bit about, you know,
thank
right before
God.
You came on.
Yeah.
So we were talking a little bit about Jack Wilshere being moved over to Bournemouth for the rest of the season. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I was surprised at it, because if this is indeed Arsene Wenger's last season, which people are saying it might be, this is his last year of his contract. He said to fulfill that, and then beyond that, who knows? Wilshere is a world class talent. He's been one of Wenger's sort of pet projects his entire career. He was considered to be the next great Arsenal player. Unfortunately, he plays like Patrick Hornquist, but he has the bone structure of Bo Bennett. He just, every time he goes into a tackle, he breaks a leg, breaks a foot. He's just been snake bit with injuries, and he's fit. He's not quite match fit for the Euros. Saw him on the pitch, but he's a talent that they could use. And that they loaned him out just surprised me, because he needs first team football to play for England. He needs to get back in match shape. But if he can't get that at Arsenal, I understand the thinking behind that. But still, he's a guy you'd want on the bench. Aaron Ramsey's hurt. He's hurt already. You think at some point they're going to need that kind of backup, and now he's gone for the season. He can't be recalled. So I was surprised there. I'm glad he stayed in the Premier League. I think it's good to see him still playing in England. Maybe he helps Arsenal beat somebody else down the road. But I was a little surprised to see him sort of shuffled off that way.
And then in terms of, I noticed they brought in some players. You know, what are your thoughts on the transfers they brought in thus far? Because obviously, you know, the big thing was Arsenal going to spend any money in this transfer market? And they got a few players.
Yeah, to quote the great soccer pundit Joe Walsh, I can't complain, but tonight I will. Sometimes I still do, because they spent money, and they spent it wisely, and they spent it on players I think are really going to be important this season. I just wish it had happened a month ago. because they could have used Mustafi at center back. They could have used Lucas Perez. Those guys I think are going to fit in perfectly. They're exactly what Arsenal need. They need a center back. They need a striker who gives them something different than what Olivier Giroud gives them. And people say Perez isn't quite, you know, superstar talent, but you can't buy those players. You're not going to buy a Messi or a Suarez or a Lewandowski. You can't get those guys unless you're Bayern or you're Barcelona. So he's a guy who's had success moving up the ladder. He's sort of a late bloomer. He's going to be hungry. This is his first chance at a top club. He's going to have Mesut Ozil giving him through balls. He's a different kind of striker, and he's that we've not had. So I think he's going to be a really big addition, just even as a change of pace. He allows Arsenal to do things tactically they haven't been able to do before. So I think that they spent a lot of money. I think their net spend was like around £90 million. That's a lot of money. So they spent. You know, they got Granit Xhaka. They got Rob Holding, who I think played very well so far. He's 20 years old. They've spent money. They've got quality. I think their team, you look at the makeup of the team now, the roster's solid. They've got, even without Wilshere, they loaned out Callum Chambers. They sold Serge Gnabry. There's still talent in every position. They've got depth. They've got quality. Now it's just put it together on the pitch.
I just want to chime in here. When everyone's fit for Arsenal, do you think Perez goes into the starting 11?
That's a tough one, because I think they can move. Perez can play on the wing, so they can still play like a 4-2-3-1 with Giroud up top, and then have, you know, Sanchez and like Walcott, or they can put Perez in, and then it gives him the flexibility of saying switching guys around. I don't know that from the start he's going to be the starting striker. I think Giroud still is pretty much entrenched there, but teams, I think, especially the top teams in Europe, have figured out how to beat Arsenal with Giroud up top. And if they can come out and throw some Perez out there where you don't know where he's going to be on the pitch, or Alexis Sanchez, you can move guys around. It gives them a different look.
So, you know, these signings, you know, you mentioned how you're feeling pretty good about them. Do you think that this moves the needle? Does this make them a Champions League team from here on out?
I think so. I mean, the talent's there. The quality, and the problem with Arsenal is they always had this lack of balance. They didn't have their center backs. You know, Gabriel last year was at times like a train wreck. Per Mertesacker, you know, is not the fleetest of foot when he's healthy. He's a little bit older. You've got, you know, Mustafi's he starts for Germany, the German national team. He's pretty good. And I think he's very much like Koscielny. He's sort of a guy that can read the play, can break things up. He's got pace. So he gives them another guy you can just plug in. He's a first team center half. You don't have to worry about really who he's matched up with. So now they've got Koscielny, they've got Mustafi, they've got Holding, Mertesacker, Gabriel when they come back. Same thing up front. I think, you know, Granit Xhaka is a guy we brought in earlier. Took him a couple games to get acclimated, but against Watford, he looked fantastic. He's just a guy that knows how to – he can thread the ball through the center of midfield from the back, get it to Ozil quickly, and then move. And you, once you get the ball to Mesut Ozil in space, you're in business. And I think he's going to help that aspect of Arsenal's attack. And I think that just the spine of the team was weak. They didn't have the center half, center defense, center midfield, up top. They're much better than they were.
And, you know, I think we had talked a little bit in the preseason about whether or not this is Wenger's last season. And, you know, at one point, your tweets are fantastic. I think everybody, whether you're an Arsenal fan or not, you need to go follow Gene's at
or
Gene
especially
Brummer.
A Spurs fan. And you're like enjoying my misery.
Yeah. You know, they range everything from, like, you know, Wenger's got to go to, I think one was like Wenger should be president of the universe or something like that. So where do you stand on that after three games? And, you know, it's three games, but are you sort of still middle of the road and wait and see, or have you changed at all in your stance?
Yeah, it's definitely a wait and see. I mean, I obviously swing from, you know, complete polar opposites, from, you know, ecstasy to agony. That's just being an Arsenal fan. But the fact that he lent Wilshere out, I thought, was exhibited a sort of a level of ruthlessness I haven't seen. Like, they could have kept him on the bench and just let him sit there and play seven games, play the FA Cup. But apparently there was an article today where, like, Wenger told Wilshere, this loan has to go well for you to stay at Arsenal. If this doesn't go well, if you don't perform, if you don't play well, you know, behave off the pitch, it's over for you. And so I think that was maybe a little bit of steel that he hasn't demonstrated in the past. So
From an outsider's perspective, I mean, I think the Wilshire loan actually makes a ton of sense. He's played just over 100 games for Arsenal since 2008, which is nuts to think about. I mean, especially he's coming off some pretty serious injuries. To get him out, and you know, it's not just okay, he's over his injury now. I mean, it's going to take a while for him to get match fit again to kind of be able to play, you know, a high tempo game in an Arsenal starting 11. I would assume so.
Right, and I don't know where he fits in. I mean, is he going to play ahead of Ramsey? He's not playing ahead of Ramsey. He's not playing ahead of Ozil. He's not playing ahead of Santi Cazorla. So where does he get minutes? And I think that the loan makes sense in that point, but at the same time, you'll be saying, well, he's a nice security blanket to have in case something happens.
Yeah.
But I when it happened, I was surprised, but I was like, yeah, that makes sense because he has to play. He's going to be 25 this year. And like you said, he just hasn't been able when he was 19, you looked at him and said, he's going to be a world superstar player. He was 19, looked like he was 13. He's sort of slightly built, but he just flies into tackles. He's very aggressive. Unfortunately, he just kept getting hurt and serious injuries. It took seasons away, not just, you know, a few weeks here and there.
Yeah.
Well, here's an interesting question for me. If you're looking at Santi Cazorla and even like the Jack Wilshere love, would you see Santi Cazorla as a backup for Mesut Ozil in the 10 role, or do you see him in that deeper midfield where Wilshere would play, where you're kind of congested with now Elneny, you've got Coquelin, you've got Xhaka, you've got options there that you didn't necessarily have, and you can bring Ramsey back there deep too.
Yeah, like last year the Cazorla Coquelin deep, like sort of the holding midfielder partnership, really worked well. He really was good coming out of the back. But he can play up front too, and I was surprised how good he was playing and sort of the deep line midfielder. So I think they like Xhaka there. I'm not sure if they're thinking about a Xhaka Cazorla pairing, or maybe moving Cazorla a little bit up so that they're sort of not in a diamond formation, but they're separated a little bit to link the play. It's kind of a problem that they have so many midfielders who kind of play in the same kind of, you know, they're creative, but they're not real true wingers other than maybe, you know, Theo Walcott. You know, you look at Cazorla, Wilshere, Ramsey, Ozil. There's four guys: Xhaka, Elneny. I really like Elneny. I think he's a really good player. You have six guys there. Xhaka and Coquelin and Elneny are sort of more your traditional deep lying midfielders, defensive midfielders. But Cazorla, Ramsey can also play that role and play it really well in more of attacking mode.
Yeah. One of the things that I'm going to ask all of you is this general question, and I'm going to leave it hanging out there for you guys to finish the sentence. The setup is this: over the next five games, blank. So you can fill in the blank. And just to paint the picture for Arsenal, their next five games are Southampton, Hull, Chelsea, Burnley, Swansea, and there are some cup games that are intermixed in between. I think that's a pretty decent setup. I mean, to the point that I went out and snatched up Ozil for my fantasy team because I think they're going to go on a run. Gene, what do you think? Over the next five games, blank for Arsenal.
I think they need like 13 points. They need four wins at a minimum. And the game against Chelsea is at the Emirates. They have to find ways of beating Chelsea. They've got to do that. And they've already spotted Man U, City, and Chelsea 5 points. You can't just, you know, hopefully they'll beat up on each other, but they've got to be, and you can't, a tie against Chelsea at home is not a disaster. You can't afford to lose that game. You know, like Southampton, Hull, Burnley, Swansea. Okay, maybe there's a tie in there somewhere. You have an off day. Maybe you win all four, but they can't come out of there with two wins, two ties, and a loss. They'll be too deep in a hole to begin with. They need to start, you know, those four games that are against teams that maybe aren't the elite, although I think Southampton's always really tough against Arsenal. They've met, you know, really crippled us the last few years. But like 13 points is very, very ambitious, but it's time to start thinking it. You know, they can't lollygag. not now.
Yeah, can't get too far behind the eight ball because then you're just going to be chasing it all season.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, I agree, and I think that's realistic. I think the Chelsea game definitely stood out to me, but I think otherwise it'd be good to see Arsenal pick up some points here. All right. Well, thanks, Gene. Obviously, hang around. Don't go anywhere.
Yes.
Justin, we're going to jump to you. Let's talk some Chelsea. So I mentioned
all right.
I mentioned sort of coming into this that you know, we haven't really talked a lot about Chelsea, and I feel like not that they haven't been talked about a lot in general, but I feel like Man City and Man U have sort of gotten a lot of press because of Pep and then because of Zlatan. Chelsea just very, I don't say quietly, but have just sort of gone about their business, picking up, you know, three wins over three games. What do you think so far? Obviously, you know, the big news that came from the transfers is that David Luiz is back. But what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think we've kind of almost become the forgotten team, aside from, you know, Diego Costa and his wonderful antics at times. Besides that, I think because we're not in Champions League and we finished so low last year, people tend to forget that we kind of exist and have had success. But I think we've done well. I like Antonio Conte. I still think he's trying to figure out what exactly he wants to do. I don't think he's figured out his best 11 or the system that he really wants to play. I think he's kind of working with a system that works for the players now. But I think there's going to be some adaptation that's going to be needed over the next few weeks, and we'll see how it plays out.
So in terms of, you know, your take on Conte, I remember when we were talking and I said, you know, Chelsea will be successful this season because, and you said, Conte. And like, that was it. That was the end. That was the end of the discussion at that point. Do you still feel that way? Do you feel like he has a strong enough hold on this team that it's just full steam ahead and they're just going to keep hold of one of those top four positions for the rest of the season?
Well, I'm not so sure, so to speak, that he's, in terms of grip on the team. I think what you see is that he's a very, whereas former managers like Mourinho were more reactive, they react to what's going on. Conte's a little bit more proactive. You saw that in the first two matches, the West Ham comeback, and then you saw it again at Watford. When he needs to make a change to the system, he reacts very quickly, and he changes the system to make it work so that we can go and attack more or do what's necessary to win. And we've had two great come-from-behind wins. So the good thing with that is it shows there's team spirit and the fight is back, but it also shows that the manager is aware enough to say, okay, this isn't working. We need to change it right now before it's too late.
What makes you most nervous about this team? I mean, obviously they got three wins, so there's not... They're table-wise, they're sitting pretty. But as you know, somebody, you write about them, you follow them closely. What are you most nervous about with this team?
I'm most nervous about that defense. Terry Cahill and Ivanovic are not necessarily giving me the, how should I put it, the most secure feeling, especially Branislav Ivanovic at right back. He's now north of 30. I think he's 31 now. He's not getting in quicker. He never was very quick to begin with. But I think over the last few seasons, you've seen that he's very suspect to pacey wingers who like to run at him one-on-one. He's not the greatest one-on-one defender. And I think some of that has been solved by the signing of N'Golo Kanté. But at the same time, I think that trio of John Terry, Gary Cahill, and Branislav Ivanovic, as they've gotten older, they're not necessarily the greatest defenders now in terms of dealing with quick strikers, dealing with guys that try to play in behind, things of that nature. So I think that's the biggest concern, is can we stop goals? Not necessarily whether or not we can score them, it's can we stop them?
I want to jump in here and just quickly ask you, how are your thoughts on how you think Conte is going to deal with Hazard? Because I think under a Mourinho Chelsea, it seems like in the past he's been very much a proponent of setting up his kind of star players in the perfect way to allow to get the most out of them. Whereas it seems like Conte maybe favors a philosophy more of the whole kind of team as a unit type aspect. And I haven't watched a ton of Chelsea, but when I have, it seems like maybe Hazard is a bit more on the periphery as compared to when he was in the past. Is that a fair assessment? And how do you think Hazard kind of fits into this Conte system? Because I would assume that, I don't know, from the outside looking in, Hazard, you're probably your best player.
I think with Hazard, it's interesting because Conte is very much, Antonio Conte is very much an Italian manager. There's a specific managers in terms of structure and team. I think with Hazard, what you see with him is rather than what Mourinho allowed him to do, and even later on hitting, where he was allowed to drift more to the middle, Conte wants to keep the width. So Hazard's doing the same things that he's been doing. He's just doing them from a starting position that's much wider. But I think the major change that I've seen with Antonio Conte is, Hazard's not doing as much defensive work as we thought he might be asked to do in an Antonio Conte system, and he's not doing as much defensive work as Jose Mourinho asked him to do. So he's almost playing in a role wide where he kind of can conserve his energy a bit, almost kind of like you see with Real Madrid and Gareth Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo, where they get a little bit more freedom to attack as they would like, but within a specific set of instructions, like you must stay on the left, don't come to the center or I'm going to kill you type thing. But I think that's what you're seeing from Hazard, is it's a little bit more structured, but he has a little bit more freedom within that particular structure to do what he wants to do.
So I'm going to tee you up again, just like I did Gene, and ask you the question, over the next five games, blank. And to paint the picture, Chelsea has, over the next five games, Swansea, Liverpool, Arsenal, Hull and Leicester, with again, you know, some cup games sort of mixed in. So not, I don't think it's as great a lineup as maybe Arsenal have. But what do you think over the next five games? Blank, go.
We will find out if this team can challenge for the top four in the title. Interestingly, in there, I will say we play Leicester twice, actually, because our EFL right. Cup game is away at Leicester, and then we play them, I think it's a month later, at home in the league. So that should be an interesting thing to see what the difference between those two setups is. But I think given that run-in, Swansea isn't particularly – they look a little bit lost this year. I don't think they quite are as good as they've been in past seasons. But I think we're going to find out an awful lot about them going up against a good Liverpool side who presses, who plays well. And I think we're going to find out a little bit about the team also mentally against Arsenal, because Gene will probably agree with this to the negative side, but there's a little bit of a hoodoo that Wenger has with Chelsea managers and in general Chelsea over the last – decade or so. Previously Didier Drogba. But
yes.
In general, I think we'll find out over these next five games where we stand in the title. If we're still keeping pace with City and United, who I do believe have better squads than us, we'll see where we're going to end up at the end of the year and how good this team really is.
So the thing will be, check back in with Justin after five games, and we'll get your reaction on that. Because, it's interesting. You know, we talked about how Hull is sort of just sitting outside of there. We're going to learn about a lot about Hull in the next five games. But, yeah, Liverpool, Leicester, Arsenal have all sort of been there. So it's not going to be easy, but it'll definitely be entertaining to watch. I think we're definitely going to be talking about that Chelsea-Arsenal game here in a few weeks. One to circle on the calendar. So moving on, I guess. Hey Josh, how's it going?
Hey, what's up? Doing good.
Let's talk about everything.
That's great.
Got that war chest out there, huh, Josh?
We don't need players, really. I mean, Everton's transfer window was not the greatest. I do think we got some good, signings early on in the transfer window with like Ashley Williams and Bolasie, but. Overall, there's not much I can really say about the transfer window that compared to these other teams. We were kind of just sitting there waiting for it, and we kept on being told that we were going to get a Cabley, maybe Joe Hart. That didn't happen.
Broken up over the loss of Joe Hart?
Yeah, I wouldn't say broken up, but I do think we need someone else. We need a starter keeper, and we I don't think we have one yet. Not saying that I totally just blanked out on our keeper's name. Skedenberg is bad, but he's. I don't think he's going to be the long-term solution.
I mean,
don't have very much to say. Actually,
I was going
to
say, obviously, you're happy because they're currently sitting in fourth.
I'm just worried. I'm happy, but I'm worried. After the transfer, seeing what everyone else did, for once we had money to spend, and it felt like we just couldn't find who to spend it on or get who we wanted to spend it on. So it's one of the situations where, we're doing good right now, but all these other teams had made some good transfers. So it's like, well, maybe we're not going to be in a good spot coming up the next five games if the other teams have strengthened their teams and we have not.
I just feel like, you know, I know a handful of Everton supporters, and I always feel like the demeanor is always sort of either even keel or leaning towards pessimistic about the team. So when I said, you know, are you feeling good? You know, yeah. Like, that just seemed right in line with...
That's an Everton supporter right there.
Well, I guess... Go ahead.
Overall, though, I am positive about where we're going as far as with Koeman and the way the style is and the play I've seen so far with just the three games. But my only worry is that we're going to need... more depth than we don't have it.
Yeah. Now you mentioned sort of, you know, the upcoming five games. The next five games look pretty decent for you as well. So you have Sunderland, you have Middlesbrough, you have Bournemouth, Crystal Palace, and then Man City is that last one over those five. What do you think? You know, finishing that statement of over the next five games, how do you finish that as an Everton supporter?
Again, I'm going to sound like an Everton supporter right here, but I want to say it's going to give us a false sense of security because these next five games aren't that bad all in all. So I can definitely see us doing good in these next five games. But is it going to be all kind of like smoke and mirrors? It's like, oh, everything's okay. We're great. We don't have to worry about the signing window. We're doing fine without the big names. And then suddenly after that, we start playing more of the bigger teams and get knocked down. So we'll see. But those five games, at least, I am happy those are what we have to face next.
I say you could realistically pick up, I think, 10 to 12 points over Definitely. That stretch, which is pretty nice. I think Man City is going to be an interesting game to watch. Not that the rest aren't going to be interesting games to watch, but I think out of those five, that's going to be your biggest challenge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it is, but are we going to go in thinking like, oh yeah, we're going to kick their ass? Probably not, but but at the same time, we can definitely, I feel like, especially since that's like the last game, right, out of the five, so by that time, I'm hoping we gel even better, and we do show up and have a competitive game.
Mentally, you feel like you're world beaters, and so you go into it telling them, bring it on.
Yeah. Exactly, yeah, we have all the confidence last
you know, over these first three games, what has most surprised you about Everton so far this year?
Barkley's not injured, so that's very surprising.
Once again, an Everton great reaction. Yeah.
and just the coach style of Koeman and like him being able to make decisions before the half, like just like, hey, this isn't working, let's change it, and he makes the right change, and it does pay off. That's something that was very much missed last season. Martinez, it feels like we're actually getting direction from the bench, which is great.
So do you think, I'm going to put you on the spot here, do you think by December, and obviously we're not, I don't have the full schedule pulled up right now, do you think this is still a top six team?
Yeah. I do think top six is doable. It's going to be hard. It's not going to be an easy top six, but I do think top six is doable. I wouldn't say we're going to be, you know, in the top four, but top six is doable.
That's fair. Sounds good. And Kevin, that leaves you last to talk about Liverpool here. I think, you know, the most depressing thing about Liverpool is that they got rid of Mario Balotelli. You know, convince me why I'm wrong, Kev. Tell me why I'm wrong.
Out on the town when that happened. Yeah, I mean, that was a long time coming. I mean, I think, you know, if we talk about transfers, it's been honestly, I mean, I think the best part of the transfer window for Liverpool has been Niels. We got $6 million for Brad Smith, which is nuts. We got $15 million for Jordan Ibe, which is nuts. We got everything back we paid for Benteke, which is not, I think Benteke is an extremely good player, but it was obvious that he wasn't going to be playing for Liverpool. So the fact that we can recoup that much is nuts. I mean, yeah, I think our net spend for the transfer window was practically zero, which a lot of Liverpool fans are kind of upset about. They're like, oh, you know, FSG, our owners, aren't spending enough money and we need to bring in more players and all that kind of stuff. I'm not exactly sold on that. I think the ins that we brought in are very good. I mean, I think, you know, Gene, you mentioned it before about how certain teams shop in certain pools. We can't really go out and get a world-class player. Even if we have the money for it, you know, they're not, why am I going to come to Liverpool right now? And so I think, you know, having Klopp there is a big pull, but, you know, there's still a lot kind of standing in our way. So as far as transfers are concerned, I mean, I think Mane is going to be great. $35 million for him looks like a pretty good deal right now after spending, what was it, Josh? Like 32 on Bolasie, and he scored like 2 goals for Crystal Palace over the last
30 seasons. Great transfer window. I'm just saying. Fantastic.
I think Mane is going to be good. I mean, Lars Karius broke his hand, and I think he's going to be our starting goalkeeper. He's coming back in now soon, which I think is going to be big. We got Matip on a free. I think he's going to be a really good setback for us. So all in all, I think we did really well in the transfer window. Maybe still missing a left back, but, you know, in Klopp we trust right now.
So, Kev, tell me this. Okay, you know, we talk about sort of the demeanor and how, you know, Gene, you're up, down. Josh, you're sort of, you know, level or pessimistic. I feel like Liverpool fans, I don't want to say are eternally optimistic, but give me a reason to be pessimistic about this team. We've talked about a few things on the show.
It's not my nature.
This is why I'm asking you to do it. Pick something that gives you pop. Why are you worried about this team? What did I say? They're in 11th right now?
I'm not paying any attention to that whatsoever.
Like I said, eternally optimistic.
Numbers don't mean anything.
No,
I can think of one reason.
look at City, United, and Chelsea. Their first 3 games were all very winnable games. I mean, we go to Arsenal, we go to Tottenham. Obviously, yeah, we tripped up massively at Burnley, but we go to Arsenal, get 3 points. We go to Tottenham, we get a draw. I'm fairly happy with that, to be honest with you. Like I said last week or whatever, a lot of it's baked in the context of the loss of Burnley. What to be pessimistic about? I think the left back position is somewhat of a concern. The fact that we're playing James Milner, a right-footed midfielder at left back, is not, you know, something to be excited about. Obviously, it doesn't... You know, I think a lot of fans are frustrated with Moreno, especially the last season we had 2 cup finals. He played extremely poor in both of them. That is somewhat of a worry. I think also, I don't know. I think Klopp's trying to work with a system right now that a lot of the fans don't really see maybe working or what he wants to get out of it. You know, the fact that Sturridge still hasn't started doesn't look like he's probably going to start even next game, in my opinion, mainly because of the international break. And he's had Firmino to work with for 2 weeks now. But it's kind of a weird thing happening there. I mean, yeah. So wrapping up pessimism, left back, and the fact that we're going to come up against a lot of teams like Burnley, who kind of put 10 guys behind the ball and say, come and break us down. Historically, we've been really poor at that, and we've shown it again against Burnley. And I think, you know, we're going to have to get over that if we're going to have a successful season. And, you know, we didn't see signs of it against Burnley. When teams want to play against us, a la Arsenal, a la Tottenham, you know, we play well. And I'm not worried about those games. It's the bottom half of the table when they come to Anfield and park the bus. That's going to be something that we really need to work out quick if we want to have a good season.
Well, you know, you mentioned sort of the bottom half of the table, and over the next 5 games, you're not facing too much of that. You know, up next you have Leicester, then Chelsea, Hull, Swansea, Man U. So over the next 5 games, blank, go.
Yeah, I mean, I'm made up for the Leicester game. It's been 4 weeks since the start of the season that we've had a home game. I think everyone's going to be queued up for that one. The new main stand is finally in. That gets a couple thousand more fans into the stadium. It looks great. Even if it's the Leicester team of last year that show up, and I don't think they've necessarily been playing that way this season, I'm still pretty confident about that game. Chelsea's going to be rough. I think, you know, if we don't lose to Chelsea in that second game, I think that'll be big for us. Otherwise, you know, I don't know. I think the run in here is we need to. I hate kind of using this term because I don't know if I really believe in it, but as long as we're still in the hunt come February, I think that's the goal. Because it has been kind of a rough start to the season as far as fixtures are concerned. I think these next 5 games are a bit tough. But if we can kind of hang around there, maybe in around the 6th place position, especially with more home games on the back of the season, we can put ourselves in striking distance, I think we can do it, especially without European football. I think we have a good shot. But I think it's getting through the first half of this season unscathed, I think, is the main concern.
Fair enough. Fair enough. So this is just, you know, obviously four different perspectives. There's a lot of other perspectives from a lot of other supporters groups here in the city, and we will absolutely have you guys on for sort of the next iteration once we have the next international break. But I appreciate you guys coming on and sharing your thoughts. I wanted to open this up just in general. You know, most interesting stories so far that you think just league-wide across the EPL, 3 weeks in, when you look at what's happened, you know, what are you most intrigued by? And, you know, I'll start things off. Everybody doesn't have to say something, but I'm just going to open it up. You guys can feel free to jump in. I honestly think that the most intriguing thing to me is Hull right now, where I think when they came in, nobody really gave them a chance at all. I think we all just sort of assumed that they would be right back down at the bottom. And they're playing with pretty much a short bench. You know, they talk about all these other teams
no bench, saying, essentially.
Yeah, like we got to go out and sign all these other players. And Hull's like, nah, you know, we're going to play with 13 guys and we'll be fine. And they went toe-to-toe with the likes of Man U this past weekend. So I think that's a team that... Go ahead, Justin.
Well, we'll put it this way. I think 38 games doesn't lie. And I think with Hull... there's an initial rush of togetherness, and Mike Phelan's done a great job. But I think when you have that short of a squad, it's going to wear on you if you have to play the way they do every game, which is sitting back, staying solid, two banks of four, and defending and looking to hit on the counter. Eventually, that's going to take its toll. And I think you saw that at the end of the game against United, because they looked, some of the defensive line and some of the midfield looked about dead on their feet. And that's after just, what, the second, third game of the season. So I don't think they can carry that on. But it's nice to see a team that has so many off-the-field problems in their boardroom and so on doing well at the start. But I think over 38 games, you're going to see that they're going to end up right where they need to be.
Do they have a manager?
That's what I was going to ask, if they officially
sort of. They haven't officially hired Mike Phelan, no. He's still technically an interim.
Yeah. And so, well, I mean, I guess I am in the same boat. I agree. I don't think you can last the whole 38-game season with such a short bench. But there's that little piece of me inside that says, you know, from the start, I think a lot of people were saying last year with Leicester, like, this isn't going to keep up. Like, there's no way. And then it's just like week after week, they're producing. So I think, well, if nothing else, I'm just intrigued. I'll be interested to see how the next five games play out for Hull.
Well, it'll be interesting for Hull because they are up for sale and they're still in the process of a buyer being buyers making bids on them. So should they get some decent investment, if you could see them going on a nice spending spree in January, and if they're still kind of above relegation and keeping above water, it might be interesting to see where they end up. It's just getting to that point of January and finding someone to buy the club that's become a real problem for them right now.
Yeah, and their next five games are Burnley, Arsenal, Stoke, Liverpool, and Chelsea. So we're going to learn a lot about them, I think, especially the Arsenal-Liverpool-Chelsea games. So that'll be interesting. Kev, what do you think in terms of just what's intrigued you most about the season thus far?
I mean, it's tough because, yeah, it's after, you know, after three games, it's difficult to pull out anything. But I will say I'm shocked at how fast City started. I was sure it was going to take Guardiola time to acclimate to the Premier League. And I watched him in the first half against West Ham. I was watching. I felt like I was watching some like secret of the human race being opened up before him. I mean, it was incredible. I've never seen. I haven't seen anyone play like that and play that well in such an unorthodox manner. So for me, it's been nice to see. I mentioned it before, and thankfully we don't have any United fans on here. But I think obviously Mourinho is a great manager. But I don't think he necessarily, quote unquote, innovates and pushes football forward. I think Guardiola does that. I think Guardiola is a great manager, and he pushes everything forward. And, you know, We saw the whole counterattacking philosophy and direct response to this whole 4-2-3-1 possession kind of style. And I think Guardiola might be taking a next step past all of this and putting on a show for everyone. But overhyped, definitely, after listening to myself talk about that. But but yeah, I was really impressed watching him.
And sort of continue with that, I mean, having watched City, I mean, I said, you know, Arsenal, you can't buy a world-class striker. City have one. Sergio Aguero is a world-class striker. He's the best striker in the Premier League by quite a bit, I think. And if he stays healthy, especially the way they're playing and the quality throughout the team, they added some players. But when you've got Aguero up top, he can just do things that he looks – it makes it look – he scores with his head, with his power. If he stays healthy all year long and you get Guardiola, they seem to be settling in, I just think it's going to be really hard for anyone to top them. They're loaded with talent, but he's that X factor that he could score 35 goals without breaking a sweat.
Yeah, definitely.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with them because I believe his suspension was upheld, his 3-game ban.
Yep. This is the next three.
Which is just like Mourinho.
Justin is so excited about that.
I'm so excited because if that was Costa, they'd be throwing the book at him.
He's on my fantasy league. I'm so upset that he got banned. I'm like, oh, man.
Well, I think we'll find out a lot about Guardiola and that City team without him, because I think they're a completely different prospect without him, and that's been shown over the last couple of seasons. But to Kevin's point with Guardiola and the counterattacking, the interesting thing with Guardiola, even when he did tiki-taka back with Barcelona, it's really a counterattacking game. I always likened Barcelona and what they did to being like a bottle of water. The molecules kind of float around in the bottle of water, but when you poke one hole in it, all the molecules go rushing out. So with Guardiola in possession, you keep the ball as a defensive tactic. You open them up, and as soon as that gap is there, they're all pre-programmed to rush through the gap in a specific fashion, and that's how they open you up. So it's something that worked very well with Barcelona. It worked very well with Bayern Munich. And it's going to be interesting to see how well it works in the Premier League when you have more teams that will sit behind the ball and defend that way.
Justin, I think that was the deepest thing that's ever been said on this podcast. I'm sitting here, I'm like, bottle of water, where is he going with this? And then as soon as you said it, I was like, that makes perfect sense. He's amazing. He's a genius.
I like tactics. They're very fun, and I find ways of trying to explain it.
I think that was very well put. Anything else? I mean, any other storylines that you guys think have been really interesting thus far that have stood out over the first three games of the season?
I'm more kind of interested in seeing if the balance is withheld this season with, you know, the usual suspects being at the top and at the bottom in the middle. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it felt like last season was so crazy and you didn't know what to expect and everything was turned on its head. This season, I'm wondering if we'll see a balance return or if it's going to be more of a mixed bag and seeing where teams land that you don't expect. I have a feeling it's going to get more balanced out again this season, at least from seeing the games with the
and
first
the money
three
spent and
weeks.
The players brought in.
Exactly.
I mean even Leicester brought in, it's been like 75-80 million pounds right at the deadline. They brought in, I think, another striker and winger. I mean, there's so much money in the Premier League right now that even the quote-unquote smaller teams can splash money that, you know, very few teams in Europe can do that. And so I think you're seeing it's kind of odd. You're seeing this, you know, La Liga and Serie A, they're very, very top heavy, whereas the Premier League is from top to bottom might be the most competitive league by far. There's so much money, there's so much talent, but it's hard for, I think, those teams to really, you know, separate from the pack. And that's why you have the Barca's and Real Madrid's winning the Champions League, are going to the final every year, because the Premier League teams are just murdering each other week in and week out.
Yeah,
it's brutal. Well, I think that this has been a really fun discussion.
Oh, so, there's one last thought of the storyline I was thinking of. I want to see where Tottenham end up. And to the ire of all the Spurs fans in the city, I'm going to say that I'm interested to see how Spurs end up, just because it seems for the first three games that there's almost an England Euro hangover. Harry Kane hasn't scored in the Premier League. Yeah. Dele Alli's almost dropped off the face of the planet. Rose and Walker haven't looked quite as good. The only solid performer's been Dyer. So I'm interested to see if there is, if this hangover continues, and if they're, if maybe last year was kind of like Leicester, a product of a lot of the bigger teams falling off, or if it was that this is a generation that could push on and be a real force. Because they, right now, they're kind of just floundering around a little bit.
Yeah, it's weird. Go ahead.
As an Arsenal fan, I've been watching them pretty closely, and they've got some result. They've won a game. I forget who they tied.
Liverpool.
Mm. They look, yeah. Liverpool, we end up giving four goals in about 7 minutes. they don't look, like you said, they don't look good. Like, they just look like they, like you said, I think they are having that England Euro. I mean, Harry Kane, Dele Alli, they just look a shadow of their, and they don't seem to like know what's wrong. They're looking at each other just like confused, and they just look flat. And it might just, you know, take, you know, Pochettino a chance to get them, get their legs back, get their heads back. The international break might have helped some of those guys get, you know, get away from the training ground a bit. Get, you know, they're playing for England against Slovenia, but yeah, they don't look good. And as an Arsenal fan, awesome. But I just watched, I think I watched the Liverpool game, and I was just like, this doesn't look, because last year Spurs looked scary at times. They were just absolutely, the talent's obviously there, the youth, the exuberance was there, and then they hit a, you know, hit a wall, and then just kind of fell apart at the end. So
I will say, you know, Liverpool made them do that, and we're going to win the league. So that's all that needs to be said.
And then Hazard broke them with the 2-2 draw.
Rooting for Chelsea is like, I should absolutely be filthy doing that. But I was, when Hazard scored that goal, I was jumping up and down and screaming and singing hosannas to his name.
And then you went and took a shower.
Yeah. then set fire to my picture, my picture poster of Diego Costa that I.
All right. Well. Yeah, we're approaching an hour here. So just a few things to wrap this up. Again, this has been a lot of fun. The games, you know, we're coming out of the international break. There's a lot of interesting games that we talked about that are going to be coming up here. In terms of the games that we'll be talking about on the podcast for next week, we've already sort of decided we're going to talk about Man City and Man U. I think all the advertisers out there have just legally obligated us to do that, since I think that's all anybody's going to be talking about. our buddy, Richard Nightingale, is actually going to be at the game as a guest of Adidas. So good on you, Richard. If you want to read his piece that he wrote about the Hounds, where he mentioned that, head over to mongols.com. So he's going to be out there. So, you know, if you have anything, you know, you want him to send pictures or whatever, just hound him on Twitter. We're going to talk about that game. We'll also talk about Liverpool versus Leicester at Anfield, just because Liverpool being, you know, the Pittsburgh CPL team. Otherwise, we need a third game to talk about. So make sure you go over to vote, head over to mongols.com, hover over the Premier League link in the nav bar, and choose Game of the Week. And we'll have the week three voting up there, and you know, whatever team or whatever matchup gets the most votes, then that's who we'll talk about. So even if we're already talking about your team, go over, look at the list, see what games you think are gonna be most intriguing, and we'll watch and we'll talk about them. So that's it for, you know, what's coming up next week. One of the other things that we've talked about loosely is this other show that we're doing. I think we've talked about it mainly on the Riverhound show, but the Nightingale, we're doing his own standalone podcast. So if you have any questions about anything soccer related at all, obviously I just mentioned he's going to Man City and Man U as a guest of Adidas. If you have questions about managing a soccer club, agents, just his general thoughts on the EPL, let us know. We're going to structure a show that's basically just questions, and he's just going to give responses. So hit us up on Twitter at Mongols, send your questions, and we're going to put something together coming out soon here. But yeah, otherwise, for all of us, Gene, thanks for joining us. You can check out Gene and all of his up and down great tweets at Gene Bromberg on Twitter.
All up this weekend.
All up this weekend. Justin, at Justin Weibel on Twitter, talking about Chelsea. Justin, you also write about them, so there's a lot of good stuff going on over there. Thank you both for joining us.
I really should start live tweeting these matches. I don't bother to do so, but I really should start.
That could be extremely entertaining as well. Kev, Josh, as always, thanks, guys. I'm Mike.
Yep.
I think we're all just glad to have the Premier League back after an international break. I felt like there was, you know, I've just started watching it intently, and I felt like there was a hole this weekend that I just didn't know what to do with. So
it will always feel that way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had no time to watch games, but I still felt like there was this hole, like I should be watching games. So we're all glad to have it back. So everybody, thanks for listening. Guys, thanks for joining us. We're definitely going to have to do this again soon. It's a lot of fun just getting together and BSing about the Premier League. So for everybody, I'm Mike. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you real soon.